This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Best pitcher I've ever faced, and you played with him for a lot of years. For my money... And Pedro was unbelievable for years at a time. Roger Clemens, I want to mention him. Randy Johnson's the best left-hander I've ever faced. But for me, for my money, the technician, the best, every time I faced him, he was never bad.
Right.
He might have an off day for him, but he was never bad.
Yeah.
And that's Greg Maddux.
Who else?
Doggy threw... they always talk, well, Maddux, you know, the people now, they talk, well, he threw 87. No, Maddux, he'd get up there 93, 94 anytime.
Not when he won the four Cy Youngs. He was probably pitching in the low 90 to 92, 93.
Right.
But, you know, in those.
He's the best I've ever seen.
And what made him the best? It wasn't. Now, he had the stuff was moving all over the place.
Right.
He had command of everything. So what was the difference between Tom Glavine, Hall of Famer, Greg Maddux, one of the best right-handers to ever take the mound.
Right.
I mean, those 4 years that he won the Cy Young, absolutely. Do you know he did not give up a three-run home run in those 4 years? That's incredible.
My son's in the minor leagues right now. I try to explain what it's like facing Maddux to him.
Yeah.
I said, he's different. He's just different. I faced a lot of great pitchers.
Right.
Doggy was always different than everybody else.
Yep.
Just a little bit different. He had the ability to put it in a window.
Yep.
And for the normal guy, when he missed, he'd miss by 6-8 inches. Greg would miss by an inch and be pissed about it.
And be mad. Glove up over his face and drop an F-bomb.
For those years you're talking about where he was winning the Cy Youngs,
yeah.
I mean, if he went 7 innings and gave up 2, that was a bad outing. And I remember those days because I was in that league or in that Reds would come and play you guys.
Sure.
And I'd be like, no, I don't want to see this again. No. I'm going to get Maddux, Smoltz, Glavine I do every time. I want Merker, and no disrespect to Merker.
Right. Avery.
He's a great pitcher.
Yeah.
But I don't want Maddux, Smoltz, Glavine because that's who I always get.
So the difference between the two, Glavine had tremendous control of one side of the plate. That was going to be arm side away from right-handers into left-handers. Okay. When he started throwing left-handers, the changeup, that's really what put him in the Hall of Fame. And he'll tell you that. Okay. But what made Maddux superior is his command of multiple pitches and command of both sides of the plate. You know, he was just as good throwing the ball away from a right-hander as throwing in. You know, his approach, and you probably can remember this, when there were guys on base, he went soft. He didn't throw the fastball. I mean, there was one time, actually, you might have played. Did you play with Ronnie Gant when he was with the Reds?
Yes.
Okay. So Ron Gant, you know, former Brave.
That had to be 95. You guys beat us in the postseason.
So, and Ron Gant came out of his shoes all the time. He was not looking to walk ever. And Doggy used to tell us, he goes, hey, there are times that I will set a hitter up. We were just talking baseball. There would be times I'm setting up a hitter for a 3-2 changeup. BS, you're not setting anybody up for a 3-2 changeup. Well, he had the bases loaded. And he throws it. He just undresses Ron Gant on a 2-2 fastball. And of course, he does the glove. He drops the F-bomb. I think he did it completely on purpose. And by the way, the bases were loaded, and he threw the dirtiest changeup you've ever seen. Ronnie missed it by about 3.5 feet on a full hack. It wasn't like a breakdown swing, you know, because Ron was sold out on the fastball. After that, you go, he said, Greg, tip your cap. Because you just set somebody up for a 3-2 bases loaded changeup. It's got to be the right hitter. But that's what made Greg so good. He was never going to give in, and he had command of four, he had true command, meaning he can put the ball where he wants to with four pitches.
And contrary as a hitter, contrary to what people think, yeah, velocity is always a positive to have that.
Sure.
But some of the best pitchers that I've faced through the years, the ability to subtract in a big situation, 3-1, 2-0, everybody wants to rear back and give you that best fastball. Well, what do you think I'm looking for?
Right.
So if you have the ability, if you're 95, sitting 95, and you have the ability in those big counts to give me an 89-mile-an-hour fastball, you'd be amazed
sure
how off the barrel you'll get me.
That's where right.
The best I've ever seen coming full circle was Bartolo Colon. He came up as a kid. He's throwing 98, 99.
Oh, my gosh.
And 3-1, 2-0. It was, we used to say, that's the lightest 98 I've ever faced because it came off the bat. It wasn't heavy.
Yeah.
And when he started making that change and actually started kind of pitching like Maddox,
right,
that two-seamer to the outside corner, which you mentioned Leo Mazzoni, that was his whole bag. Bag in Atlanta, away. And we'll get to him in a minute. But, yeah, interesting. The ability to subtract instead of always adding, because as a hitter, we're ready for you to add, especially when we're young hitters. That's not a problem for us cranking it up for velocity.
Right.
But if you have the ability to subtract when we think you're going to add, it's amazing how much success can be had with that.
I talk to pitchers all the time, you know, especially when you're talking, even amateur hitters, when you're talking about, you know, the middle of the lineup guys, you know, you're facing a 7-hole guy in high school. All right, you can throw the fastball. He's not going to hit it, you know, 95% of the time. But when you're facing the 3-hole hitter, what does that dude want to be? He wants to be a hero. And that's what, this is one thing that Mad Dog, that Greg Maddux actually told us. He goes, they want to be heroes. So they're just naturally going to swing. So I'm going to feed off their aggressiveness by subtracting.
Moving on, I want to talk about the Braves and your career with Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I believe you're there from 88 to 95, went over to Boston that 95 season.
Correct.
I was there 1 year, 1999. Mm-hmm. Played for Bobby Cox. Different than any other year I'd played. Had some good years with the Reds. We had a couple playoff runs a couple years later. It always ends with the team that Stanton's on, too, by the way. 99, you beat us with the New York Yankees.
Right.
2001, you knock off my Mariner team. So it always, you were always on the, you were the X factor.
That was the 116 team.
Yeah, the 116. Yeah. Of course, you guys bumped me. Stanton's on the other end. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But 99, and you'd lived it already. You go from the Braves to the Yankees. But I noticed something different. I went into camp, and there were a couple new players. Brian Jordan and myself were the newcomers to the team. And it had Chipper and Ryan Klesko and Andrew and Maddox Moltz-Glavin, the normal, the kind of that core that was there for a long time. And I remember Bobby having that talk, and that first day of spring training, we all have it every year. And he said to the new guys, Booney, Brian, he goes, here in Atlanta, we win every year. He said, I'm going to put the lineup out. I'm going to expect you to go out and steamroll your competition because that's what we do here in Atlanta. I think that year we ended up winning 104 games. Different mentality than I'd have ever had or seen on any other organization I played for.
Yeah.
I remember going to the postseason that year, Mike. And I'd been to a couple postseasons, and you know, you have the shares meeting at the end of the season. Who's going to get what? Are we going to give anything? Well, I sit in this Atlanta shares meeting, and they're giving chairs to the peanut lady.
Right.
And I'm going, Glav. And Glavin's running the show. And I say, Tommy, I said, what's going on, Booney? And he says, you know, laughing. He says, Booney, we go to the playoffs every year. You know, it's not a big deal. We like to take care of. And I'm looking around to the guys. You know, I'm one of the few guys that haven't been there a long time. I'm like, well I don't go to the playoffs every year. I don't think we should. And they kind of, you know, I was in the minority, obviously, in that room. But it was a different mentality.
Sure.
You saw that. You saw it in in New York, where winning was expected. Talk about your time there and what you saw on that unbelievable run in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, we started in Atlanta. You know, I go back to prior to Bobby Cox being the manager. So I came up in 1989. Russ Nixon was the manager. Halfway through the 1990 season is when Bobby actually went from being the general manager to being the field manager. And that's when they brought Leo Mazzoni in as the pitching coach. It was Bruce Del Canton prior to that. And, you know, through those first couple years, we knew we had a good team. They brought in some key free agents. Bobby had decided, and then John Schuerholz had decided, okay, it's time. You know, we've got the young talent. Now we need to bring in some veteran presence. And I mentioned Charlie Liebrandt was a guy. We brought in Terry Pendleton, ends up winning an MVP. The St. Louis Cardinals thought he was done. Juan Berenguer in the bullpen. Rafael Belliard at shortstop. That was before Blauzer took over. Yeah. And what the Sid Bream at first base. And what these guys did, they just kind of got us all going in the right direction. The rest was history. Through those first couple years, you really didn't feel like you were doing anything. You know, you were struggling just like everybody was. I think both seasons, but especially the 92 season, halfway through the season, we were like 500. You know, 91, same thing. I mean, we were an okay team through the first half. Then the second half happened. It was like we just simply didn't lose. That's when the tomahawk chop started. It was a good time in Atlanta, there in the real early 90s. And it wasn't until, you know, 93, 94. Now all of a sudden guys are getting a little bit longer in the tooth. You realize what you're actually going through and the expectations grew. We had the same thing in New York. In New York, they win the World Series in 96. I wasn't on that team. I was on the Texas Rangers. They actually came through us to win the World Series. I go over there in 97. John Wetland and I trade places. I go to New York. He goes to Texas. And but the mentality from day one was always different. And you talked about it. That was something that you really didn't talk about. You know, you knew you were a good team, but there's a lot of good teams. And and the expectation in New York, everyone knows what the players said, what the organization said. But it's truly what was the mentality. If we don't win the World Series, then it's not a good year. And I had never been on another team that was the case. You know, 97, I think the reason why we went through the run, 98, 99, 2000, and then making the World Series in 2001, the first three winning those. So my opinion, the last baseball true dynasty, you got to win championships. You got to win back-to-back to do it, was – just that. 97, Mariano gives up the home run to Sandy Alomar Jr. To walk us off. He was playing for the Indians. He had an opposite field home run in this decisive game, and it was a walk-off home run, and then the Cleveland Indians ended up going to the World Series. But that stuck with us, and through the offseason, it was, you know, nobody had a, you know, he had a good offseason, but nobody had a great offseason because you always felt like there was something, we left something undone. We didn't finish what we started. And then 98, 114 wins. I mean, it was like we never lost. It was incredible. Once we got on a roll after about the first week of the season, and that's when it really started. But that carried – what happened in 97 carried on in 98, 99, and 2000. Had a great bunch of guys. For the most part, we got along. You know, there's obviously always some issues here and there. You don't put that many type A personalities together for 8 straight months and expect everyone to get along. But when we went on the field, everybody had one single goal, and that was the team win. You know, whatever I had to do, the team would win. Did we have the best pitching staff? No. There was other pitching staffs that on paper you'd probably say were better. Do we have the best offense? Probably not. There were offenses that you would say were better, but the collective as a whole, you just simply weren't going to beat us.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business.
You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
No, I believe me, I lived it. And especially at old Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Jeter's always saying the ghosts will come out. You know, my brother played there a year. He goes, yeah, Jeter told me the ghosts would come out. I said, I've seen him a couple times.
That's right.
I've seen him a couple times with right. those weird home runs.
They, you know what, though? The Yankee organization played up to that big time. You know, you think it was a coincidence that they played the Yankeeographies during the visitors' bowl, yeah. Batting practice every day? No. They're playing into the aura that was the legendary, you're playing the Yankees. You can play any other team, but they're not the Yankees.
Yeah. And I thought both of those teams were similar. I mean, especially when you got to the mid-90s. It was Maddox, Smoltz, Glavine, Chipper, Andrew became a fixture there. And then it'd be like they'd bring in a few players every year to complement that.
There's always a turnover.
New York, similar. I mean, you had the main guys with Posada and Jeter and Bernie. And, you know, you talked about I just had to throw this in. You were talking about Paulie O'Neill earlier. I don't think Paul gets that as much credit as he should. I'm telling you, as an opponent coming to New York, you know, you hear about Bernie and you hear about Jeter and you hear about Alex in his day. I'm telling you, those meetings in the visitor clubhouse was don't let O'Neill beat you.
Yeah.
And it was that more times than not. It wasn't the guys you hear about all the time. Mm-hmm. It was don't let Paul O'Neill beat you. He was that big of a cog in that wheel.
He was.
And he's got all the rings but you don't hear his name as much as you hear the other guys.
Right.
I think he should.
And the reason why, because he wasn't a big home run hitter. You know, he hit for a high average. He had a high on base percentage. But, you know, where Paul O'Neill made his money was actually on the bench. And I could tell you, playing with Atlanta, he's in Cincinnati. Now, you remember when he was in Cincinnati, he was a role player. You know, Lou Piniella didn't think he could hit left-handers.
Yeah,
big so O'Neill. But his intensity was something we missed. He retired after the 20 season. He retired after the, what was it? The 2000 season. I'm sorry, 2000 season. And I think in 2021, we missed his intensity. Because the dude was 40 years old. He's still grinding out every single solitary at-bat. You see him all pissed off at the end of the bench because he lined out yet again, didn't get his base hit. And I think we missed that in 2001. I hated him. Oh, I said, oh, my God, what a big freaking baby. Look at him on the bench. He's just, you know. But when he was a teammate of yours, you freaking loved him. Because if a 40-year-old can grind out an at-bat down by four in July, you know, in middle July with nothing on the line. If he's grinding out at bats, you fed off that hit, that energy.
You want him on your team.
Absolutely.
Two pretty eccentric owners too. you got any comparisons to the Ted Turner, Steinbrenner? I always looked at Steinbrenner as, you know, a guy on the other side thinking one day I'd love to play for the Yankees. Just, you know, on my way out, I always love coming to New York. It was my favorite trip because no matter what happened, I know it was going to be exciting going, especially playing at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. Yankee Stadium was going to be rocking and rolling.
Right. Playing at Shea, you know, it might be all right, but there was nothing quite like playing at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
You got any comparisons between the two?
Not
both
really.
Eccentric.
Both very eccentric, both very unique. You know, the one thing, and listen, you really didn't hear much from Ted. You know, maybe something in the paper, but he had so many other businesses going on. He's running TBS. He's got all this stuff. The one thing I always remember about Ted was in the 1991 World Series, we're playing Minnesota Twins. And we're in the Homer Dome up in Minnesota, the Baggy, and it's so loud that you can't talk. You know, if you and I were sitting next to each other in the bullpen, we couldn't have this conversation. Just the gray noise was that loud because it held a lot of people and it was a very small stadium. And he fell asleep. Ted fell asleep in the front row, sitting right next to Jane. He fell asleep. Yeah. In a World Series. He fell asleep. So that's the one thing. And that was kind of Ted's, you know, yeah, this is kind of cool. You know, in the 80s, he went down and he managed the game, you know, went down on the bench, put on the uniform and managed. Hey, he's the owner. He can do whatever the frick he wants. So, yeah. George was the other man. George had as much competitiveness as all of us players did. You know, the one thing you say about an owner, you know, what do you want as a player? He was going to open up the checkbook,
right,
and help the team win, period. It didn't matter how much the player was. He wanted to win that bad. He got himself in trouble in the 80s because of it. But, you know, that was just one thing. And there's nothing. Yeah, you know what? He's going to say him and David Wells went back and forth. And, you know, he didn't like Arabu, Hideki Arabu at one point. But he was gonna say what he was gonna say. But when it came right down to it, if there was a part that your team needed to win, dude was gonna go out and get them. That's all you can really ask for.
As a player, without a doubt, because I was on teams that did that, and I was on teams that didn't.
Yeah, you had Marge.
I had Marge. I'll tell you, Marge would make me turn in my cracked bats to get another dozen.
Yep.
But when push came to shove, she wanted to win.
Yeah.
So you put up with that. I look at a George and I can handle sparring or George saying something about me on the front page.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I think you guys knew that when it comes crunch time, when it comes, that's all he wants to do is win. Yeah. And you see other teams that necessarily that isn't their first and foremost on the agenda.
But George liked you. He ended up loving David Wells. Okay. And the reason why, because did you get to play with Boomer?
I played with Boomer in Cincinnati for a year.
Okay.
You got
so another very unique guy. Yeah, very unique guy. Okay. But also a guy that was gonna say what was ever on his mind.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what the forum was, didn't matter where he is. And there's probably gonna be I just saw him the end of last summer. Yeah. We had the 98 we celebrated the 98 team. And it's the first time I had been back to New York. I don't know why it had taken me so long, but it was the 25th anniversary of the 98 team, arguably the best team to ever walk on the field. Booney, do you know the numbers? We won 125 games that year.
Oh, it was ridiculous. Yeah, with the
on the ring.
Right.
On the ring. It's sitting in the safe right next to me. On the ring, it actually says our record, which was 125-50. We were 75 games over 500 that year. So we celebrated that, and it was awesome. I mean, goosebumps the whole time I was there. But, you know, David Wells was going, and George liked to confront people, and he respected you if you came back at him. And David went back and forth with him. He actually went up, and they had several meetings in his office that Boomer was not going to back down. And that's what George liked. George loved that. He had as much competitiveness as any of the players on the field.
Yeah. It's kind of a Lou Piniella mentality.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yankee, same thing. If he loved fighting with you,
right,
but if he respected you, that's a guy you wanted in your corner.